Welcome. To the womb of light, our true home. My late teacher, Harada Tangen Roshi, used to teach the practice of Shikantaza, just sitting, as being a clean white sheet of paper. Ready for anyone to write on us, scribble on us, paint on us, draw on us, tear us up. And sometimes we can hear an image like that, think, well, If any dot of ink appears on me, this white sheet of paper, then I'm not doing Shikantaza. But I wouldn't understand it like that. I would understand it as we be the white sheet of paper and we're ready for anything to be written. And as the ink starts to express itself on us, that's just fine. It's impossible to stop the ink flow. So, as the words are written across us, that's fine, but still the practice remains of being the clean white sheet of paper, even as we're covered with conceptual words and images. And it's kind of hard to do that, right? Because the conceptual words and images are what we're so used to, so we tend to focus more on them. You know, if I look at a piece of paper like this, there's some white area here, but my eyes don't usually go there, right? They go to the writing. What's this all about? All these shapes and symbols. But I could look at the white that's all around the images. And I think it's partly hard because white isn't even a color to look at. And this piece of paper of Shikantaza is like the kind that's like bleached. Like really, like bright white, you know. Some paper companies advertise just how white their paper is. But this kind of paper, Shikantaza paper, is even so white that it's like zero color. It's actually like more like clear. And it also is not like a usual piece of paper that has these kind of edges. It's like the boundless piece of paper that's so bright and so clear that we can't actually see it. Sometimes also we talk about Zazen as turning the light around and shining it back. And the problem with that is that we think when we're shining the light of awareness back onto itself that we'll see something there. That's a potential pitfall in that particular instruction. Okay, where is it now? Where is the source that I'm looking back at? But it doesn't look like anything. So rather than seeing the source, seeing the light of awareness, seeing this immaculate sheet of paper. Maybe it's more accurate to speak of being it, since it can't be seen as an object. If we were even slightly to get a hold of it as something with some particular qualities, that would just be another object of awareness. And then we would have to ask, what is it that's aware of these qualities? And we take a step back further until we don't find anything. That's the point of this Zazen practice, is not finding anything there. But yet we can be it. And this gets hard to talk about, because we also know, when we start to consider how this works, that we, of course, we already are it. How could we not be awareness, as long as we're knowing anything that's going on at any moment? There's an awareness of it, so we are that. We can't see it as an object, and yet we can be it, be what we already are, but be it wholeheartedly, which is a kind of willingness to be what we already are, and a kind of devotion to being what we already are. Serving our true self by devotion to it. We could even say loving it. Again, we could even say that it is love, but we are loving this love called the radiant light. So there can be a kind of emotional quality of the practice. There's a kind of discerning quality, because we're carefully examining every experience that we're having and concluding that no experience is it. Nothing that comes and goes is it. So there's that kind of discernment, where we're even using the conceptual mind to approach this clarity. And then there's also this devotional quality, the emotional, devotional, heart quality of this is the radiant light of the universe and myself and all beings. It is the truth of ourself, and therefore that's what I want to serve, honor, for this reason it's easy to see why many traditions then can call it something like God, something that we actually even worship. And of course, we have this in our tradition too. We personify it as an image of Buddha, and then we can make offerings to it. But we're really just talking about this clear sheet of paper. So if we can't know it as an object, but we can be it, we can even say that we know it, we know the light by being it. Can you let these words sink in and verify them right now? we know this light right now by being this light. That's how we know it. It's really the only way we can know this light. Other things, it seems like we can know other things, like a book. It seems like we can know this by knowing it as an object. But the light, the only way we can know the light is by being it. You follow? Yeah. So, if we can get that far, then this is a kind of inward, thorough investigation. And examining the how this light that we are is, we find that it's not coming and going, that it has no boundaries or edges. And if we find anything that's coming and going, or if we find any boundaries or edges, then we call those objects of awareness, and we have to ask, what is it that's aware of the boundary? What is it that's aware of something that just arrived or disappeared? So we take a step further back till we find that the essence of awareness itself cannot arise or cease. I think this is an important point too. If we find anything, any possible movement arising and ceasing, edges, particular qualities like this, then we know that there's something, we're subtly, conceptually grasping something. So then the medicine for this ailment is to ask, what is it that's aware of this subtle movement, of this edge, boundary coming and going? And that question turns the awareness back. We find that which has no edges, boundaries, movement, coming and going. So then this light that we are, this jikko komyo, the radiant light of the self, is ungraspable, inconceivable, and yet vividly apparent every moment. We are it. Or it's really, you're not really it, but it is you, as our ancestors say. And then we can re-engage with the world around us, and we can look at the flower, and from this new perspective, that I am this boundless light of knowing. Looking at the flower and seeing, really what I'm seeing is the knowing of the flower. Whether or not there's some thing called a flower, the only thing that I know is the knowing of the flower. Therefore, the flower is the light of knowing. So then, from this perspective, we see that just like the way we know ourself as awareness is to be ourself, the only way we can know ourself is to be ourself. When we start looking at the flower from this perspective and see that it is also the light of ourself, then actually the only way we know the flower also is to be the flower. That was a big step there. So you might not have followed that one. Anyone not follow that one? Fine to say if not.
You could just say it again.
So did we get the first part of the only way to know ourself, called the light of awareness, radiant light. The only way to really know ourself is to be ourself, because it's not a knowable object, right? The only way to know awareness is to be awareness. That part's maybe not such a big stretch, right? Do you get anyone not follow that part? The only way to know this unobjectifiable, ungraspable, ever-present awareness, the only way to know it is to be it. Because knowing usually implies something that is known. And it's the knowing. Another name for awareness is knowing. So how can knowing know knowing? Knowing cannot really know knowing as a thing. It can only know knowing by being the knowing. Yeah? A question? If we don't get this point, then it will make any sense to talk about being a flower.
Okay. I think I understand it, but I don't know if I've experienced it directly.
Well, so we are talking about what's happening right now, right? And so the reason we often think that we haven't experienced it directly is because we're still thinking that there's something objective to experience as some experience. So actually, another way to say this is awareness is right now, for all of us, for the most deluded, distracted beings in the universe, for each of them and us, awareness, their awareness and our awareness, is knowing itself every moment. It's called self-illuminating, the third ancestor says. Talking about this, he says, it's empty, means you can't grasp it. It's clear, like a blank sheet of paper, and it's self-illuminating, with no exertion of the mind's power, the third ancestor says. Means without any effort whatsoever, the light is illuminating itself. So in a way, you could say we are having the direct experience of this right now, and to think that, but I don't think I quite am having it. It's maybe because we're looking for some signs, objective signs, and there will never be objective signs. If there's an objective sign, that's an object of thought, and then we have to turn back and say, what is it that's aware of this objective sign? So right now, the light of awareness is knowing itself, and the way it's knowing itself is by being itself. Like, right, for all of us right now. How about that? So you could say, it's contemplating a little bit how knowing works, how awareness is, and we can do this deeply and examine it, and then, but remember to keep doing this. If we start to get lost in conceptual thinking, we keep going back, and that which is purely knowing, pure awareness, pure knowing, means like before any thought about it, which is always, must be always present. Yes.
Well, what I hear is you're talking about infinity knowing itself.
You could say it like that.
And if you want to say that, that's pretty tricky to actually try and quantify that or get that into any kind of real package. Infinity will never know itself.
Why won't it?
It's unknowable. And so the fact that we arrive and are of that, does it mean
So you're mixing a couple things. You said, doesn't mean we can know it. But we're talking about...
Yeah.
We people don't know it.
No, but anything in us, if we're talking about the infinite that we arose from, and we are it, then, right, what you're saying is saying what I'm saying. There is nothing that can know it. So saying that we could know it, we could turn somehow around and by being it, know it.
So, again, this, whenever you bring in we...
I didn't say we. I said by being it.
You said... It. Yeah, but it is being itself, right?
Yeah, yes.
Infinity is being itself.
Yeah.
And then to say infinity is knowing itself, maybe is the sticking... You wouldn't argue infinity is being itself. And knowing itself, I can see how it brings in another dimension because it's adding... light into the equation. It's adding luminosity. It's adding a knowing quality. And so that's, different traditions might talk about this a little differently. So for example, Taoism, I think I don't know enough about it if sometimes it goes into this. I think actually sometimes it does because, I think of this book, Secret of the Golden Flower, which is a Buddhist-Taoist text, combination Buddhist-Taoist, and kind of goes back and forth between the two traditions. And the central practice in this text is Ekko Henjo, or turning the light around and shining back upon itself. So... maybe there's other ways of talking about this. But we're not talking about human cognition here.
No,
this is right. This light
kind
is...
kind of knowing that also is completely unexplainable.
It's unexplainable and inconceivable.
Knowing is a tricky word because knowing sounds like...
Yeah.
You've got something.
Good point. So knowing is often we use, like, I am knowing a thing. So it's similar to that. In that, that also has a kind of light aspect, but this knowing is not a subject knowing an object. It's just luminosity. Yes.
Well, I'm wondering. Obviously, this argument can't be "quote unquote" won if we're fantasizing that something that's inconceivable would be able to conceive. So I'm letting that one go, and I'm not even going to try to go there. But what I'm wondering is, do we struggle with this notion that we actually can have an experience that's not relating to the world as objects? Is that, if the answer is always it's inconceivable, then we might as well forget even trying. But I assert that I think that it is possible. I think that's part of what we do experience in this practice, which is one of the things that we keep doing, is that it is possible to not be driven by always having everything be subject to the commentary
of the making
mind.
Yes. Yes. So I think it's just a matter of in all of these questions and conversations, we have to define terms very carefully and agree on terms. So I think that's partly what slows us down sometimes. But if without doing that, it's so subtle what we're talking about that it's very important to do this. So by knowing this week, and probably for a long time, I mean not a subject knowing an object, but like non-dual knowing, which is already something that's inconceivable. And by the term experience, the way I've been using it for a while, and this is just my definition to help out here, experience, as I would define it, always means something objective that is known. So, yes, of course, Buddhahood is a direct confirmation of non-dual reality. There is such thing as Buddhahood. There is such thing as enlightenment. There is such thing as awakening. Otherwise, the whole tradition is a total sham. But is this awakening, enlightenment, Buddhahood, is this an experience? The way I'm defining it, I wouldn't call it that. But Dogen likes to use the word verification or confirmation. And I think that's maybe what you would mean by experience here, is there really is a direct confirmation or verification of non-dual reality. And we could call that an experience, but just the way I'm using the term here is this other way.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, as I'm listening to you clarify the subtle points of language, I'm also willing to let go of my views about experience.
Mm-hmm. I think the nice...
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And yet, mm-hmm. I think that it's fine for us to open to that we do have the opportunity in this human form right now, right here, to let go, open the hand of thought.
And verify and confirm.
And enjoy the self-fulfilling samadhi.
Yes, yes, yeah. And I would say the reason I'm defining experience in this way is it's a handy way of talking when we start having conversations about, I have this particular experience of light and it arose and it ceased. And I said, that's nice. Then we can say, it's an experience that arose and ceased means it's objectively known, even if it's quite subtle. So that's why it's nice, I think, to use experience in this way. What we're actually, you could say the confirmation or verification, this is kind of tricky, but you could say the confirmation actually doesn't come and go. But it seems to be, maybe you could say, at a certain point in time, from a human point of view, there seems to be a certain moment where it's like, wow, that's how it is. But that's why I like this line in Dogen, where he says, it's like a hammer striking emptiness. You could say this hammer striking emptiness is verification or confirmation. It's like a hammer striking emptiness before and after its exquisite peal permeates everywhere. It means like it seems like there's this particular moment that we might call an experience, but the content of this moment is timeless. We see that there was no beginning of this confirmation and no end of it. But then if we step back from that, which we usually do, step back from that and say, that's it, that was it. Then we made it into an experience, and which is normal and fine, and we almost have to do that. But then we just know that now I've packaged it, subtly maybe packaged it. It's as soon as we have a memory of something, it's not it anymore. That's why we have to do this right now, always right now. If we're any memory that we're chasing or anything, it's like kind of a distraction. Yes?
Suppose you are like having, you're in the midst of one of those moments, these experiences, and we're not even calling it an experience, we're just experiencing. Let's say.
Yeah, timelessly. Mm-hmm.
Why is it that some moments it seems that we're experiencing, and then
Yeah, you could say that's like these, you know, images for like the sun and the clouds, right? The sun's always shining, but then so that it's not like suddenly the sun appears. The sun is always shining, but then the clouds of our habitual dualistic thought almost are always covering it. So it's not so much that suddenly this thing appears. It's more like it's always here. It's more like it's more the something being removed temporarily. So you could say, mm-hmm.
Say that it's this non-divided self too, but it's kind of like...
They're not even part of the cloud. Another name for the clouds is the divided self. Exactly. And we could say the true nature of the divided self is the undivided self. It's just that it appear, that's why we could say that these obscurations appear to veil the sun, or they appear to veil reality, but they're also made of reality. They're also, so therefore they reveal reality.
Sometimes, and I feel like this may be incorrect, but sometimes it seems to me our practice is, in a way, cultivating the divided self that has all these concepts and ideas and delusion, this divided self, like giving it some, helping, like when we're having one of these experiences, it seems like those are opportunities for this divided self to be cultivated by actual reality, in a way. So, like, maybe even when we talk about the precepts, those seem like a kind of manifestation of
yes,
this cultivation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct to say, in a way? Like,
yeah. Yeah, and the Zen tradition, usually, you know, from the traditional perspective, is usually emphasizing getting in touch with reality first, and then from that perspective, then living our life, watching how that conduct naturally follows in accord with the reality, as opposed to other traditions, more like get your conduct in order first so that you can then realize reality. Which, you know, in a way both ways work, but the uniqueness of the Zen tradition is saying this is the emphasis is first be this clean white sheet of paper, and then and then the writing that appears on you will be very nice writing, beneficial writing, good art. Yes.
If there is no self, then we're all just this awareness, this white sheet of paper.
Yeah, like that. And so self is another one of these terms to clarify that, because sometimes here we're using the jiko komyo, the light of the self. So this self means the clean white sheet of paper that we all share. We could say capital S, big self. And then there's no separate self. Separate self means identification with just this body and mind as me. And so there's that's the separate one. I'm identified with just this body and thoughts. So you could say that the no self of this limited body and thoughts is the true self that we all share. Yeah. So, just one last bit back to the flowers. If we are now can confirm that I, here, meaning capital I, big self that we all share, is confirming itself by being itself, it is knowing itself by being itself, then everything that we see and perceive is also like the radiance of the light, almost like the awareness, its inconceivable awareness itself, is like the great sun. And by the way, Vairochana is that Dharmakaya. Vairochana, his name means great sun, great illuminator. And then the rays of light are like the everything we're experiencing, like each other and the Zendo and the flowers are like the rays of light, kind of emanating from the light. Or a more experiential way to say it, if that sounds kind of cosmic and abstract, it's more like when we're looking at something, or when we closely examine, we see that that which we're looking at is the knowing of that thing. The only thing that we're seeing is the knowing of it. So this knowing is not something other than the sun itself, right? It is this our actual being, our true self. Therefore, what seems to be known is really not known as an object. It just is the knowing of it. So when we look at a book or the flowers, we are knowing the knowing of them. So therefore we call this book, we say the book is actually the knowing of it. The flowers are the knowing of it. And we've already confirmed that knowing is being, or the way we know awareness is to be awareness. So if the book and the flowers are awareness, then the way to know the book and the flower truly is to be them. That's really how we actually know books and flowers, from this ultimate perspective. Right now, the way we're actually knowing books, flowers, walls, tiles, and pebbles, and so on, is by being them, literally. Sounds totally strange, but you might have to take this up as an investigation. But if you see that we only know things by knowing the knowing of them, then these so-called things are known by actually being them. They are us. The sound of the bird, we know that sound by the experiencing of it, and that experiencing is just light.
I have one last topic. So whatever you want to call it, we'll start with me, us, it. Anything can express its nature. That's what it does.
Yes.
Expressing your nature to me doesn't mean that thing expressing its nature knows itself. So I just have to leave that as something I have to listen to you, but you have to know that that's something, that's a koan for me.
Yeah, it can be a koan. You can, but just, you could stay open to it, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, and then, yeah, just stay open to it as a koan, I think is a great practice. Because, and then you could even bring that into Zazen even as a koan. And why does Kokyo keep talking about knowing? Why do we need this knowing part? And and then we could say, well, we're talking about this. All this, of course, is never talking about something abstract that's happening out there, some abstract model of reality. It's talking about ourself and our own experiencing. So that already is a clue why knowing is so important here. You could say, why do we need knowing here? And then the Zen like response to that is like, who just asked that? Who asked that? And say, I asked it. Well, who is this I? And they're like, how is it there's a cognitive quality here, and not a dualistic one necessarily. So something in there. There's always this whole thing that we're talking about is happening in our awareness. It's not an inert universe of dead matter. It's radiant light. It is luminous, meaning it is self-knowing, I propose. So this sesshin we're looking at, the komyozo zamai, the treasury of radiant light, samadhi, absorption in the womb of light. And Koan Ejo brings up, I think it's fair to say that for a couple years now, I love so many Zen stories, but I think this may be my favorite Zen story. Because I think it so beautifully and succinctly expresses non-duality of awareness and objects in the Zen tradition. So, and I gave a talk at the Science and Non-Duality conference a couple years ago. I thought, this is the story which I did bring up. I think many of you have heard this story. Great Master Yun Men, 39th generation from the Buddha, said to a group in a Dharma talk, "All people have a light, but when they look at it, they don't see it, so it's obscure." This is just what we've been talking about. Every one of us has a light, or you could actually translate it as this character, Ooh. Everyone is a light. But when you look for it, when you turn around and look for it as some object, you cannot see it. You'll never be able to see it, no matter how blazingly clear a concentration is, because it's not a seeable object. We see it. Again, we see the light by being it. We know the light by being it. So Yun Men says, every one of us has a light, but when we look at it, we don't see it. So it seems to be obscure and dark by our, like, because our dualistic consciousness is trying to grasp it. And that dualistic consciousness is like these clouds that obscure the light. So what is everyone's light? Yun Men asks. No one replied. So Yun Men himself said on their behalf, the Zendo, the Buddha hall, the kitchen, and the mountain gate. What is this light that I am? I can't really see what I am as anything. But when I look at a flower, I know that flower by being the flower. So, actually, I am the flower. What is this light? I can't see it in this direction, but when I look out there, what is the light? It's the flower. It's the book. It's the Zendo. It's the Buddha hall. It's the kitchen. It's everywhere, every experience. Little packaged experience that comes and goes. All those things actually are the light. And then Ejo says, now when Yun Men says that everyone has a light, he does not say it. He does not say that this light is to appear later on, or that this light existed in the past as some experience we once had, or that it becomes apparent to someone looking at it from the side. This is actually quoting Dogen's Komyo. He said the same thing. He's stating that everyone has a light. I think this is a nice point. It's not something that happened to us in the past, that will happen to us in the future, or something that we can like discuss about happening to some Buddha somewhere else as an onlooker. It's this light that's happening right now. This is exactly what is meant by the radiant light of great wisdom It should be heard and retained, enjoyed and applied in the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow. You could say the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow, I would say, relates to Arya's point about what about the actual way we're like living in the world and our conduct and the precepts and so on. That's how I hear this is, we enjoy this light in the body to start with. This body is radiant light. And when we're out of touch with the radiant light, I think that it's a, our being out of touch is a kind of cognitive error of just the, you know, beginningless habitual, tendency of dualistic thought. That's the kind of cognitive part, but also what we call the body is keeps, reifying separation and obscuring the light. And the way it seems to me that it does this is by, tensing up. When we feel a sense of separation from someone or something, like fear, anger, or aversion, or even attraction, it's kind of based on, I'm separate for something and want to get closer. All of these, you know, experiences of duality create this like tension in the body, don't you think? So that but when we start to open to how this body is the radiance of the light also, it's an expression of the light of knowing, because the only way we experience the body is the knowing of the body, right? Particularly, the body is known through physical sensation. Physical sensation is contraction or relaxation. So the body is the, what we call the body is the knowing light, in the form of knowing contraction or relaxation. And contraction generally goes with separation, and relaxation in the body goes with non-separation, being the light. So in Sesshin, there may be like physical pain, like knee pain or something. I wouldn't necessarily call it contraction. That's just like, you know, from sitting too long, the muscle is getting sore. Right? So, and then what we tend to do often is, it's an unpleasant experience, so we kind of tense up around, there's a averting from that experience, separating ourself from the back pain, and which usually increases the back pain. It creates more tension. Whereas if we feel the sensation that's just a natural arising in the knee, in the back, and all over the body, in Sesshin, then if we relate to that as the knowing light of awareness, then it naturally relaxes, and it's okay to be in this body. So this light of great wisdom should be heard and retained, enjoyed and applied in the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow. So we let the body accord with the light. And then what the body does can also accord with the light. The way we like serve oyoki meals, the way we ring the bells, the way we walk yin-yin, the way we interact in the silence can all be expressions of the light more and more. So beautiful. Sesshin just creates this way to lovingly dance with each other so elegantly in the light. And Edyo goes on, the light is everyone. Shakyamuni and Maitreya are its servants. So this comes from this case 45 in the Gateless Barrier, where Wutsu said, Shakyamuni and Maitreya are servants of another. Tell me, who is that? So there's nothing about the light in that story, but Edyo beautifully is bringing this story in of like this radiant light we're talking about is that is that other which Shakyamuni and Maitreya serve? Who is that? Or as Yunmen says, what is everyone's light? And no one answered, just like no one answered Wutsu. But Wu Men, who collected these stories, his comment, and this relates to this discussion with Kathy about experience or what I'm tentatively might call verification or confirmation. Wu Men says, if you can see that one clearly, that one that Shakyamuni and Maitreya Buddha are serving, if you can see that one clearly, it will be like bumping into your father in a busy marketplace. You don't have to ask anyone else if that's your father or mother. I love that saying. And I'll remember, but at the end, interestingly, that line of a woman is not here around the servant question, but Edjo brings it up later at the end of the essay when he's talking about the light. He says, when you really get in touch with this light and trust this light, it will be like meeting your father or mother in a busy marketplace, and you don't have to ask anyone else if that's it or not. So clear. So we also can be Shakyamuni and Maitreya. They're cool dudes. We can be like them. And how do we be like them? We do what they did. What did they do? They served the light. So we can serve the light. How do we serve the light? Exactly!
I didn't hear that.
By being the light. We serve the light by being the light. We know the light by being the light. That's why last night it really strikes me. I heard from my teacher that his teacher, Suzuki Roshi, used to often say, Shikan Taza, just sitting, is just to be yourself. And I never really warmed up so much to that. Like, what do you do with that? Just to be yourself. But today I deeply appreciate this teaching of Suzuki Roshi. And it's an unusual one. Tenshin Roshi said, I've never heard any other Zen teacher ever say that. That just sitting is to just be yourself. But isn't it? To just be yourself, because you can't really know yourself, and you can't, and any way we try to change ourself is kind of like disrespecting the light that we are. It doesn't mean we can't, if we have something that we want to, maybe like, I always bark at people when they come near me and say, well, and I like to kind of change that because, that's a quality I'd like to change in myself. I think we can still have that kind of aspiration without violating the light. But it's not so much like, I won't be the light until I change that part of myself. It's more like, I am the light, and the light is expressing itself as barking. And that's okay. And the more I become the light, the more I see that I just don't need to bark. So, and the light is everyone. Shakyamuni and Maitreya are its servants. What is not more in Buddhas and not less in ordinary beings is this radiant light. So it is existent in all. It is the whole earth as a single mass of fire. And then Yunmen said, what is everyone's light? and Ajahn comments, "At that time, the assembly made no reply. Even if there had been 100,000 apt statements, there still would have been no reply." And Yun then answered himself on their behalf, saying, the Zendo, the Buddha hall, the kitchen, and the main gate. So another way to meditate on this is when you're looking at the Zendo or the kitchen or the flower on the altar or this book as the light, a way to approach it is that, how is this me? You can say, me here, remember, capital M, me, is the radiant light of the self, right? So with this in mind, how far away from me is the book, the flower, the Zendo, the Buddha hall, the gate? This is, you can take this up in Zazen. When you're looking at the wall all day long, you can ask, first, and it helps, you have to do this exercise, first really get in touch with myself as the radiant light of knowing that can't be grasped. And then from that stance, you could say, take the stance of I am the radiant light. And you know, really get into confirming, first of all, that that's what I truly am. I am not this body. I am not these thoughts. I am not these feelings. I am the knowing of them. And then, how far away from me to me is that wall in front of me? You can take this up in Zazen. How far away from me is it? And if you say 2 feet, like that's talking about 2 feet away from the eyeball or 2 feet away from the body. That's, the body is not me, right? The body is, me is the radiant light. How far away from me, the knowing of awareness, is this wall? I think it's a great practice. And once you can confirm that there's no distance, then that's why Yun Men can say, what is everyone's light? Your light, my light, it's the Buddha hall, it's the wall, the tile, the pebble. So Yun Men answered himself on their behalf and said this. And then Edgar says, this answering himself on their behalf is answering himself on everybody's behalf. Answering himself in behalf of the light. Answering himself on behalf of obscuring. Answering himself on behalf of the assembly's lack of response. This answering himself is absorption in the womb of light. Awakening and bringing forth radiant light. Oh my gosh. I love these ancestors. I love them. How can they talk like this? He goes on. This being so, it does not question whether you are ordinary people or Buddhas. It does not discriminate between sentient and inanimate beings. Flowers, we don't usually call sentient beings, but they are the light of myself. The Zendo is not commonly considered a sentient being, but it is the light, Yun Men says. This is not panpsychism. This is simply absorption in the womb of light. Having always been shining everywhere, the light has no beginning, no location. That is why it is obscure when you look for it. It is what? Remember, the Yun Men said, what is everyone's light? This light is what? It is traveling at night. It is impossible to conceive of, even in a billion million, and just for Richard's sake, I'll add in trillion eons. And this traveling at night comes from case 63 in the Book of Serenity, where a monk asks a teacher, after the great death, how does one return to life? With the great death is seeing, I am nothing but radiant light. Who I thought I was is not who I am. I die to everything I ever thought that I could be. That's like the great death. And then how do you return to life after that? And the teacher says, you can't travel by night. You must go in the daylight. So the great death is like just resting in the night. But if you want to go come back to life, to get there, you don't travel in that darkness. You travel in daylight, which means like there's some kin here next, and then some zazen, and then we'll do some chanting, and then we'll have some lunch, and then we'll get to rest our weary bones a bit. Because we want to live. So we ought to keep drinking and eating to sustain this lump of red flesh, so it can keep spewing this vomit, atrocious words, just to tangle up everything. Yes. Yeah.
Although that happened, and it could also confirm what's already known, but so that we practice and go, I want to keep practicing because that I didn't understand that.
Yeah. And you make a good point too, that if we actually do grasp the concept through the words, then we know that in a way that's a kind of like, you know, painting of a rice cake. It doesn't completely satisfy our hunger. So that's why these questions like what and who are so great, because who is it that finally understood this teaching? Oh, great. Back to the old drawing board. They used to say. That's right. You know those, I don't know, I probably don't want to know what they're actually made of chemically, but there's these things that you can get now that are like Zen calligraphy boards, and you write on them with water. You know those things? And somehow you write on them, and they kind of like dark ink, but then almost as soon as you're writing, it evaporates and just disappears. So maybe even better than being like a clean white, sheet of organic paper, we could be one of these evaporating boards that probably has some nasty chemical in it or something. But at least nothing sticks to it. like this talk. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.